problem we have. Let's forget multiverse. Dark matter and negative energy, or dark energy. Did you say that the brain theory or string theory gives some explanation to what these two? We don't know 90% of the universe. Why worry about multiverse unless we can solve that problem?
Right, and that's... You're right, and that's one of the main issues. And the question was, different mic. Okay. The question basically was, how does string M theory in the multiverse try to answer the dark energy issue? Again, why is it so small yet positive? And that really is one of the answers or possible answers that string M and answers, and then at the same time give suggestive evidence for the multiverse. And the basic issue is, in M theory now, the vacuum value of the dark energy is negative, and it's near one in Planck mass to the fourth units. So it's down at the bottom, and everything above that are excitation modes, including ours. And basically what's been found when you along this natural number of 10 to the 500 different multiverses, you have a very narrow gap. And the range, the multiverse distribution, it's not a continuous distribution of universes, or i.e. models. It's what's called the discretum, a discrete continuum. It's a very, very narrow gap, and such that the gap between consecutive cosmological constant or dark energy values is at least as small in units, in these Planck mass to the fourth units, as 10 to the minus 120. So naturally, we have our value appearing. And it also says that we are in a metastable state, positive, and our universe itself will decay. But a very, very, the closer we are to zero cosmological constant, the more stable we are. And again, it predicts a lifetime in the hundreds of billions of years. So yes, and then naturally we have this vast array of string models or universes appearing out of it then.
I just wanted to comment on that. While technically that's correct, what I feel compelled to point out is that these things, this structure that Gerald described, is attained in string theory by a set of contrivances and appendages to the model that yield an answer that we know has to be correct based on observation. That's a very different situation than saying the model, quote, predicts this. And to take a simpler example, string theory has supersymmetry in it, and supersymmetry abhors a positive cosmological constant. It likes a negative one. Trouble is, observation says we have a positive one, very, very, very tiny. Now, there was a paper that came out, 5 years ago by this group, Katru, Lindy, Kalash, and Trivedi, the KKLT model, as it came to be called. And they found, through a set of contrivances in the theory, that you can, at the risk of sounding pejorative, gerrymander things to attain a positive cosmological constant. Now, yes, they were clever. It's a clever set of contrivances, that's true. I don't know that that should be regarded as saying the theory, quote, predicts that. Rather, I would say the theory can be adapted to do something that we want it to do based on observation. Those are very different statements.
Well, you think? Okay, I hate. I don't want to be like right in front of you. Okay, there, now. Yeah, this is Deb Harsma, and just a comment from my own area of extragalactic astronomy on the inflationary cosmology as Bruce described it. Inflation explains four or five different things that are fine-tuned. So inflation itself needs some fine-tuning, I agree with that, but it's explaining four or five other things all at once. One of the things it explains is structure formation. The Big Bang itself says, well, there's heat and energy, and all of the particles in the universe would spread out in a uniform fashion, and you would never have structures. You'd never have matter collapsing into stars and galaxies. You need some disuniformity in that initial distribution in order to produce stars and galaxies. How do you get that disuniformity? That was a problem with the Standard Model, and inflation explained that by saying that quantum fluctuations in the early universe that were incredibly tiny were expanded by the inflationary process to be the size of the structures that could lead to the galaxies we see today. Now, that's where WMAP actually confirmed the prediction of inflation, because WMAP found the structure of those fluctuations matched those density perturbations were what inflation had predicted. So that was a confirmation. Now, you raised another issue with WMAP about some asymmetry, which I think is, in my view, a more minor issue that needs to be confirmed. It's more tentative. But that is seen by my community of astronomers as being a big confirmation of inflation. So I'll give you a chance to respond.
Yeah, I don't dispute those things. What bothers me, aside from the anomaly that I mentioned, are the consequences of embracing inflationary cosmology. And you would agree that the fine-tuning issues that are associated with matter distribution and so on and so forth are on the order of, about 15 orders of magnitude or so? Certainly the flatness problem is about 15 orders of magnitude. When you talk about the decay energies, though, of the inflaton field, though, those have to be fine-tuned to anywhere from 10 to the 53rd to 10 to the 123rd in order for the inflaton field to do its job and to get the results that you need after it is decayed. Furthermore, as I was mentioning, you also exponentially increase the fine-tuning of universal entropy by employing the inflationary mechanism. Do you disagree with that? Okay. If you want a good discussion of it to make up your mind, whether you think that's a good objection or not, Roger Penrose discusses it in originally a 1989 paper, but it's also in The Road to Reality, his more recent megatome that came out in about 2004. So I'd refer you to the discussion there. Okay? I'm not sure I'm understanding your question. Oh
me.
Bob. Sorry.
Well, if I understand the question correctly, I think the framework is this. The standard model of particle physics is the model of strong nuclear, weak nuclear, and electromagnetic interactions. And that model works great. It describes everything we know except gravity. So if you add gravity to it, then you've got everything we know, period. That has been, just a moment, that has been seen. Modulo, I would agree, dark matter, which is a recent discovery. But in order for that model to make any predictions, in principle, you have to input 27 separate parameters. And it was thought generally for quite some time that the values of these parameters would be determined by a super-duper ultimate theory. These parameters are the mass of the electron, the mass of the quarks, the masses of the coupling strengths of the different forces, and so on. You can add these up. There's 27 of them. 6 quarks, 6 leptons, that gives you 12. 4 forces, then you're up to 16. 8 mixing angles are 24. Vacuum energy is 25. Gravitational couplings, 26, and the Higgs mass is 27. Now, the problem is those numbers are higgledy-piggledy. The only thing we know about them is a subset of them. If they were a little bit different, as was discussed over here by Dave and somewhat by Bruce, life as we know it wouldn't exist. But they don't follow from any mathematical model anybody's come up with. Try and try and try. Like, hundreds of people have written thousands of papers on this, and it just doesn't work. So string theory is viewed as the framework that will instantiate that, but people are moving to a multiverse model because they think the higgledy-piggledy-ness suggests we're one little chunk of a big random structure in some sense. Now, string theory, so it's not random, we have all this structure, yes, that's true, but I don't think it's good enough from that paradigm. It doesn't mean I don't think string theory is good. It means I think the multiverse paradigm in this context is not good. That's a very different statement.
Want to go across the board?
Do you want to go across the board here?
Well, I think that's a good summary of one of the essential points that I was making. If anything that's logically conceivable within the theoretical constraints of M theory happens, then how does one assign probabilities reasonably within the multiverse, since anything that can happen does happen.
I think you can say that of the multiverse as a whole, the strength of the answer has constraints. It's not anything you can have.
Right. Right.
And the underlying answer.
So given some basic physical constraints, though, anything that is physically possible can happen, even if it's way out on the tails of the distribution, and it does happen somewhere in the multiverse. And so you find yourself in a situation where we can't provide an explanation currently for the origin of life by naturalistic means, and we see things popping up in the literature like Eugene Koonin's paper, which makes an appeal to the Vilenkin many worlds in one model of the inflationary multiverse as an explanation for the origin of life that avoids intelligent design, essentially swamping out the improbability of the origin of life by infinitely many universes. And it becomes a strategy which leads, I think, to the breakdown of scientific rationality.
So let me say, concerning my own position, I do think it does undermine scientific rationality, as Bruce described. I'm very sympathetic to that argument, but I feel, especially since I'm in church, that I have to really be honest here and say there are two people here that disturb me. One is Gerald, the other is Deborah. And by which I mean the following. The strongest arguments against the position I think I'm holding and the, thumbs down multiverse people are holding is, one is, wouldn't God create the universe using the most interesting and elegant theory possible? I think that's a very powerful argument from the viewpoint of creativity of God, of the power of God in that regard. Now, I'm not so sure that string theory is necessarily the most elegant and complicated theory. It may have two. I mean, what's always bothered me about the theory, although I've written papers on it, I feed my family from it partly. When my daughter was small, I did. Now she's on her own. That, I think, is an argument that needs serious consideration from opponents of the multiverse. It's not brushed off easily. The other is the empirical argument that Deborah said, is that the honest situation is that the structure of the cosmic microwave background and the variations in these BAO, baryon acoustic oscillations, sure smell like inflation. And what bothers me about that is inflation likes a multiverse. I don't. Inflation does. But the trouble with this is, if you follow this road, it's too clever by half. The cloning problem. I mean, we've all had this discussion infinitely many times with all possible variations. Is this really a rational argument? Do we really think God does everything that can absolutely be thought of? The theodicy problem is horrible. How many people here want the Holocaust to happen more than once? Never mind 10 to the 5,000 times. I think it's a very bad... Now, so this is... I think it's a very bad problem, and it's why I think that should the scientific community converge on a multiverse as the best explanation, I think we have extreme theological difficulty in Christianity. I don't want to go so far to say it's impossible. I know someone's going to say, well, Rob, don't you remember what the Catholic Church did to Galileo? And I'm hoping to avoid that. But nevertheless, it would be disingenuous to pretend this would be theological business as usual. It's not. It makes the creation evolutions debate. That's kindergarten stuff compared to this.
I think the only comment that I would make in reference to the argument about whether or not the naturalist approach undercuts, or anybody who perhaps takes a line similar to that undercuts scientific rationality, is that, I mean, if that is actually the case, that scientific rationality is undermined by its own attempt, right, to get around the fine-tuning and perhaps other sorts of problems in this way, is that, I mean, and many of us who have thought about what it means to be created in the image of God for centuries could be wrong, but one of the ways in which we've thought that human beings imaged God, our Creator, is through rationality, right? I mean, we expect that God is, if God is anything, that God is a rational God, source of order and structure, et cetera, et cetera. So in that sense, I would say that one could find at least a theological consideration for why one could put one more log on the fire, say, against a naturalist view that ultimately undercuts the very rationality that we take to be at least one, not the only feature, but one key feature of how it is that we image God.
A couple of points. One, there's possible further evidence for a string drive multiverse in the cosmic microwave background, and that within one or two generations of CMB detectors, there are we may be finding patterns in the non-Gaussian structure of the cosmic microwave background that are predicted from string theory, and we've also found out that different compactifications produce different non-Gaussian patterns. So within 10 years, there may be some supportive or refuting evidence found from patterns in the cosmic microwave background for compact dimensions.
But why is that evidence for a multiverse as opposed to just a single universe string theory?
Two things. One, there's different patterns in the compact dimensions, and also there are some papers strongly indicating there are some patterns that will be found that are remnants of the prior universe of nucleation. Also, another point. I think in some cases it's not that much further off than the creation-evolution debate. I think a stringy multiverse is sometimes having unnecessary baggage put on it. And when you're talking about infinite things, I don't think so. String theory M has specific constraints, and we're talking possibly large numbers, but it's not necessarily infinite number of Big Bangs in a given collision. We're talking in the cyclic ekpyrotic, yes, if there's no type of entropy in the whole process, but there could well be, so that it's finite number. But each collision need not, each collision between brains need not produce an infinite. Could well be a finite, depending upon what the boundary conditions of the brains are.
Finite
number of collisions of universes produced
so
in a given
cycle. It's a finite number.
At each collision point, finite number. I mean, excuse me, not each collision point. Each collision, every trillion years or something. And then if it's cyclical or not is a big debate now, too.
But but aren't there infinitely many collisions or arbitrarily large number of collisions?
Arbitrarily large, but not necessarily infinite. That's where the minimum order 10 to 500 comes in.
See, here I go. I think this is a cheat because you're drawing as much resource as you want to make things look the way you want.
No, I'm just saying that's an unknown right now.
10 to the 500 collisions isn't enough. I'll take 10 to the 2,000.
That is simply an unknown right now. Okay, I agree. I'm saying no. What we're looking at is in basically, the basic issue is what? How do I respond to the cloning issue? You know, is there an exact copy right here? And basically, what we're seeing and what the models are created on, the whole string landscape, is different compactifications, not the same. Each compactification, if it's different, you know, you'd have to have two identical compactifications produced with two identical boundary conditions and an identical history. And, you know, that's very unlikely.
But yeah, nothing stops it, Gerald. That's the problem.
Well,
it does happen. Of course it's unlikely, but so what?
And if it's finite number, it's still unlikely.
But nothing makes it finite within the context.
But
well, it's not an inflationary model, though. Is it the cyclic ekpyrotic? It produces hot Big Bang events, but not inflationary.
Each one is a standard Big Bang inflation.
Yeah.
So you're not getting out. You're not changing anything, really. But one of the issues also we're dealing with, you know, if there's Big Bang multiple universes, and there's only life in one, I would say, is that really much different than our universe now? If we only believe that there's life here on Earth, why did God necessitate the universe as it is? If there's only life here, it's the same. I think it's the same picture. But for me, I view the multiverse as an opportunity for a vast creativity of God's differing forms of life. Otherwise, we're just talking an extension of this universe with one planet, with life.
But life-compatible universes are pretty rare, would they not?
Not necessarily fast and different. Do we believe in angels, you know, the second form of life?
That's not physical, yes.
I would say they have to have some physical description.
But we should think these guys are.
The BGV theorem just says that they're. Oh, sorry. I was asking what the BGV theorem says about the age of the multiverse, per se. Nothing except that it has an absolute beginning in the finite past. It doesn't say how long ago that was or what stage in the multiverse's development, if there is such a thing, we're at.
It is not an infinite distance back to it.
No.
Therefore, we got here pretty quick in terms of an infinite future distance.
I see what you're saying. Okay. So what is the likelihood that we would be here closer to the beginning rather than...
Is that a significant implication or not?
Somebody have something intelligible to say about that?
Well, the only thing I would say is it could be significant. The way I view this is inflation was designed to remove dependence on special initial conditions, and to the extent that, as Deborah pointed out, the current model, it certainly smells like inflation in terms of fluctuations that are seen in the CMB. But the problem with it is, from my viewpoint, and Bruce's, I guess, is that as the theory has has developed, it wasn't a matter of a big expansion giving just one universe like ours that did it. And that would be a bit weird, but it would imply, I think, a speciality. It would be easier, I think, to incorporate a notion of telic purpose, I suppose that's redundant, of purpose, into the universe. And I think I would have to disagree with Gerald. String theory's got this on the order of 10 to the 500 different kinds of universes. Each kind, of which ours is one, happens as often as you need it to happen. I do not see anything in string theory that obstructs that possibility, and my best understanding of the literature is this is what people wish the theory or anticipate the theory to have. Now, if each of the 10 to the 500 kinds was realized only once in existence, that would be a different story, and that would be unusual in itself. But nevertheless, as Gerald has said, there, he's got a good criticism. Should we be disturbed about other multiverses relative to life on other worlds? And to some extent, I think we should be. The problem of if we do find other intelligent civilizations, yeah, I mean, they're going to challenge our views just by their own existence. But there's no guarantee they're out there. It may be the universe needs to be as big as it is for us to happen once. That's not impossible either. It's not fun from the viewpoint of science fiction fans. I mean, that's not my, you know, what...
Somebody else have a question? Somebody, people back there.
Even if there were a zillion universes like our own, God is in part, you could decide only this one will have life.
Well, sure, that's a theistic constraint on the multiverse. That is not what multiverse practitioners are doing. So in their language, you're putting a prior probability on certain theories. You want theories in which some people have proposed this. Why can't God do lots of different stuff? And of course the answer is yes. My disagreement is, my question is, how much different stuff does God do? And I think I don't see what sense it makes to believe in a God that does absolutely everything that can be done. It seems like a pointless thing to believe in. So some have proposed there's sort of a minimum standard of morality in every created universe, and there's no universe that falls below the standard. Now, are we at rock bottom, or are we... I don't know. It's a thinkable theoretical model, but somebody back... Ted really wants to ask a question. Can we go there and then come back? I agree.
Did you want to? There's somebody there.
Some of that.
you're inferring scriptural revelation as in Isaiah and so on? Is it,
we go across the board.
All right. Well, I would say that the multiverse raises the question as to what revelatory content we believe Scripture has and how we value that relative to a scientific theory. This is part of what I mean by saying the multiverse will not let us do theological business as usual. And my strong voice to Christians that are fans of the multiverse, like Gerald, like Don Page, whose views challenge me and I respect very much, is this is where I think I've probably pushed Don. You just can't say God created the multiverse, what's the big deal? It's a very big deal, partly because of what we understand of the character of God in Scripture. And my difficulty at a theological level, as Bruce has described, not only in terms of rationality, as he said, but in terms of justice, in terms of theodicy, I don't see how to square it with the character of God. Now, gee, Rob, you're pretty stupid. Maybe I am. Maybe some theologian could convince me, but I'm not going to be convinced easily. I'm not writing carte blanche I love that phrase. I'm not going to baptize them until they've passed confirmation class. This is a very, very challenging problem in view of the broadest scriptural understanding. I did put the point of the end of Jesus. There's nowhere in the Bible that it says there is no multiverse, and one might argue heaven is an aspect of the multiverse. But a God that does everything, a God that allows evil to happen arbitrarily many times, once is bad enough.
Well, given the probabilistic resources of the multiverse, you would have worlds in which prophecies were uttered and by chance came true. So you'd have a naturalistic explanation for the prophecies as well, would you not? If you take that viewpoint.
It's the same thing. You have the same naturalistic explanation for everything. The whole Bible itself is just in the same way that Kuhnen is explaining the origin of life. You can explain everything that you see, and as a result, you explain nothing.
Yeah. Everything happens somewhere,
right.
So why not here?
But as a rejoinder that I can't resist giving and may get me into trouble, if you really believe in the multiverse, then I think that universities should start hiring young Earth creationists, because somewhere a young Earth has fluctuated out of the vacuum arbitrarily many times. Okay? And if you really believe in the multiverse, you have to accept this, because it can happen. Not only can it happen, it's more likely than the universe we think we have now. It's less likely than a Boltzmann brain, sure, but our universe, it would be deeper in the entropy scale because it's got to climb up more in time, whereas, well, you know, fluctuating a chicken out of the vacuum is comparatively easier. Now, of course, the chicken will probably fluctuate back out, but I mean, in a bizarre turn of events, these people have more scientific credibility if you go that. I don't know if you would...
Basically, yeah. I think we're putting too much freedom in a string-derived, M-theory-derived multiverse than all of this. You know, even for 10 to the 500 possibilities, different ones, and then fine-tuning each of these. And we are really talking a fine-tuning issue to have two identical universes with identical histories in that same set. I think that may be even more fine-tuned than a multiverse could provide, that there's the five of us sitting at another place right now discussing this. I think that really we're adding fine-tuning even more than M-theory may allow.
Yeah. It seems to me like we're mixing kinds of issues here. One is anything can happen. There's problems with that. But that's not what all multiverse theories are like. Saying lots of things can happen at the beginning point of the universe is not the same thing as saying all possible universes, all possible
something to that. Yes, that's correct, but the problem is that's not what proponents are saying. It's certainly not what Vilenkin is saying in his book, Many Worlds in One. They are what... infinity, no, not necessarily, but as much physical resource as you need to produce the special conditions we see, yes. And the whole point of the exercise of the paradigm is to avoid fine-tuning by replicating a situation often and ideally showing that the one we observe is typical within this paradigm. So, to put it more simply, Ellison Bundrit pointed this out in 1979. If we believe the universe is infinite in size, or rather arbitrarily large in size, with an arbitrarily large amount of matter and energy, then we are indeed replicated, whether string theory is true or not. We have the problem even at this simplest level. And people sort of, nobody really thought about that till multiverse things became more fashionable. But we have to live with this unless we believe, and to me this is an argument in its favor, that the universe is not infinite in size, that it is closed back on itself in some way and does not have an arbitrarily large amount of matter and energy. Then you're out of the problem. This guy is really on time. You want to put a theistic constraint on the multiverse, and philosophically that's your right. So the scientists would say, what probabilities would you predict for what occurrences under what circumstances? All I'm saying is that those proposing the multiverse as such, and I would include the string multiverse in that, are want to avoid any invocation of such constraints.
Hear the whole thing. You said, are there? Yes, there are, and this is something that Fermilab has been watching for, and now CERN is taking over, and that is detection of picosecond black holes at CERN in the LHC. When particles collide and annihilate, energy can actually be pushed into the bulk space. That's this extra space between the observable brain and the hidden brain. That will have the appearance of creation of a black hole that will only last for a picosecond. And then it has a very clear and unique decay scheme. There have been over 100 papers written on this. And so high-energy experimentalists are watching for this at the LHC. And they were looking at this for Fermilab also, but there was nothing there. But CERN is taking the ball and going with that. that will be a clear evidence of the bulk space and of the brains. And then we go on from there. Do the brains ever collide or not? Yes.
Gerald is certainly correct that people have proposed that there could be mini black holes produced at the LHC and that would decay. There have been people in this station that have proposed this might be an environmental danger and they should be stopped because if these black holes suck away the Earth, we'll all be killed. But scientists say, of course, they're confident that's not likely. Well, in a multiverse, you can never be sure, right? So I would say, see, I have a different take. If this is, personally, I'm very skeptical this phenomenon is going to be seen because it needs a whole bunch of if this is true, if this is true, if this is true, then. But I agree, it might happen. As a colleague of mine, Valerie Froloff, when I asked him about these mini black holes, what do you think of them? He says, put it this way, the probability that it will happen is zero, but the importance is infinity, so when you multiply them together, you get a finite number, right? Now, this would be, I would say, it would be confirmative or strongly suggestive of extra dimensions, strongly suggestive of brain-type pictures, not necessarily of a multiverse. I think the strongest empirical evidence for multiverse indirectly is from the cosmic microwave background that Deborah said, that it suggests inflation and inflation fits comfortably in a multiverse. Now, you can get out of that, but by the standards of the scientific community, you have to wiggle and squiggle a bit. I believe, if what I understand it, what's the contrast between multiverse and Niels Bohr's Copenhagen solution? Well, I assume the question refers to the many worlds view of quantum mechanics. And the big puzzle of quantum mechanics is that causality, as we wanted it to be true, or as people wanted it to be true over 100 years ago, didn't work out the way people hoped. Things are not fully deterministic. They're only, at best, probabilistically deterministic. So the idea in quantum mechanics is that, this microphone is either here or here, but in the quantum world, it's sometimes here and sometimes there, right, to stretch what Dirac did in a classroom once. So the problem is that the outcomes occur with different probabilities, but whenever a measurement is made, we see just one thing. And what we don't understand is how we go from situations where several things appear to be true simultaneously, but whenever we look at them, only one thing happens. Now, people like me think the wave function collapses, which is more along the Copenhagen lines. People like Don Page think you prevent collapse, like they would say, Rob, you don't know how to explain collapse, which is true, I don't at this point. He would say, I'm going to avoid that by saying, whenever a measurement is made, there's a universe where I see outcome A, and there's another universe where I see outcome B. And this bifurcation of universes just goes like crazy. I have never understood how this is a better explanation. I just can't get it. I've tried and I've tried, and to me, this is creates more problems than it solves. That's all I can say. There are many other scientists that agree with my perspective, and I guess I look forward to a day in which we have a more complete understanding of the theory, then either wave function collapse or something similar will replace it.
We have time for one more question.
VSL means variable speed of light, as was pointed out. And this was proposed originally by my former supervisor, John Moffat, and then revived again by Joao Maguiero and Albrecht, I think, about 6 years later. So Moffat was in 93 and those guys were in 99. And the idea was we need some competitor to inflation, right? A bit like quantum mechanics. It would be nice if there were something that wasn't classical and something that wasn't quantum that we could at least compare theories to. So that was the motivation. And the idea was that perhaps the speed of light is not a universal constant, but has changed through history, and so the effects that inflation gives us are actually not due to inflation, but due to the fact that that light had a different speed in the past than it does today. To my knowledge, the status of that model is viable, but the community regards it as somewhat contrived. But if it were true, it's at least potentially a way of avoiding some of the multiverse implications of inflation. But it's at a bit of a state, well, you can debate who likes what, because in part aesthetics is highly determined by the sociology of the scientific community, particularly in theoretical physics, maybe more than any other discipline, although I should let the biologists and chemists and so on speak for themselves, perhaps. But the models look kind of ugly. Now, one might say all these gazillions of inflationary models with the horrible inflatons look ugly. I agree. It's a matter of taste. But that's the status of this day. To my knowledge, they're not empirically ruled out. VSL is not ruled out. You could, but what's the point?